A lot of faggoty things. So many faggoty things. Too many faggoty things to count. Millions of faggoty things.
The man smiled, and yet it was obvious he regretted saying that last part aloud. Perhaps he could have phrased the entire statement a little better. But it was too late now.
Yeah, that sure was a real treat.
The noise level of the crowd abruptly fell to a hush-like whisper.
You got a problem with my good friend?
Asked Stinker, silver monogrammed toothpick bopping up and down in his enormous, sensuous mouth.
Because I don't take too kindly to people who ain't too friendly to my friends.
Maintain,
muttered Boner, who was standing next to Stinker.
Not worth the gosh darn trouble it's written on. Likely swooping off barley wine. You got a president to meet, son, a dang old president.
I asked if you had a problem with my good friend,
said Stinker, not letting it drop. No one talked to his friends like that, even if they were kind of annoying.
Didn't know tough guys were friends with Homo sapiens,
hissed the man in the Confederate hat. This was getting strange. There was trouble in the air. Jumbo could smell it, just beneath the smell of Ma's famous cheap chucks sizzling on the grill, all hot and blackened. People called them upchucks. They did smell awful good, though. The lobsters in the tank, on the other hand, smelled very bad. Boner wondered if perhaps the tanks should contain water and not just street gravel. Jumbo did a spastic little dance to show that his arms were thick and chunky. Some in the diner laughed, most didn't. The mood had already been killed, which was a shame. Jumbo carefully climbed down from the diner counter and stood off to the side. He wasn't a fighter. The show was over, and he was famished. Time for a self-applied chocolate enema.
Need I repeat myself?
Asked the man in the Confederate hat.
Oh, are y'all too pansy to answer?
Oh, I think I already gave my answer,
replied Stinker, walking without hurry toward the man.
I didn't hear it,
said the man, not moving.
How about now?
Asked Stinker, raising up a pool cue, which was strange. The diner had no pool table. Stinker swung the cue straight down onto the man's Confederate hat. There was a dull thud. To Boner, it sounded almost as if a watermelon had just been dropped off a tall building by a trucker attempting to impress a Memphis whore. And within no time, the man in the Confederate hat had crumpled to the diner's floor, bleeding profusely and seemingly expired.
Now,
said another large man, placing his cheeseburger on a plate and standing up from the counter. The ashy dingleberry was wearing a caterpillar trucker's cap. He wiped his chin with a cloth napkin that Ma was world famous for. They were the softest.
That wasn't a smart thing to do, because that was my good friend,
the man in the hat continued.
Turkey. World's biggest stuffed turkey.
The large man had many tattoos. 'Twas tattooed from arsehole to breakfast time, from nose to hose. Most of his tattoos were swastikas, which usually signified danger and racism. Stinker hated a lot of things in this big old world. But what he hated most of all was hatred. Just despised anyone who didn't love and respect anyone else who might look and act the tiniest bit different. Stinker hated that more than anything.
Looks like we're about to play ball,
said Boner to Stinker, who shrugged.
Just another day at the office,
said Stinker, his body coiling like a king cobra with a beer belly.
Ass, grass, or cash. Nobody rides for free.
The first punch was delivered straight down the middle.
Wah!
The fight was on. Chapter 8. A friendly stop. The fight was over. The gang was back on the road, tooling down the four-lane stretch of asphalt toward a future only they could envision. Stinker's mind wandered back to what had just happened. The fight hadn't started off well. The man with the swastika tattoos had been a solid puncher, This definitely was not his first diner fight, and he had gotten in plenty of robust licks that Stinker, Boner, and the rest of the crew were still feeling. Stinker had fought back valiantly, as had Boner. In the corner, Jumbo was asleep atop the number one American champion Evel Knievel pinball machine. A small dollop of whipped cream covered his left eye, dreaming about marshmallow clouds and vanilla rainbows, no doubt. Riding strawberry unicorns through fields of hazelnut candy corns. Stinker tried to think of more edible and food-based Fantasyland scenarios. He could only envision Jumbo petting a chocolate mint squirrel with two misshapen peanut M&Ms for testicles, but that image wasn't exactly jibing. Buck, using his arms as batons, had conducted the fight as one would an orchestra. A little more kicking over here, and a little more punching over here. It was funny, and if Stinker hadn't been trying his best not to die, he would have laughed. Maybe he had. He couldn't remember. Then the fight had taken a turn for the strange. Rascal the Chimp had unexpectedly appeared through the diner's front glass doors, literally through them, and had wasted little time in creating great destruction, ripping apart faces and arms and legs, and in one case a giant toe belonging to a traveling belt buckle salesman. Rascal's strength was enormous. Estrus would do that to any chimp. And Stinker was happy for it. And responsible. He had let the old girl out of her circus chains. So maybe Rascal's appearance hadn't been so unexpected after all.
Even lady monkeys ain't easy when it's that time,
Stinker had thought as he watched in wondrous fascination.
Females are one hell of a complicated species.
But then, within moments, things had turned even stranger.
Had there really been a food fight? Pies and cakes and even custard?
Or had Stinker imagined that? No, he had not imagined that. Or maybe he had. It was difficult to tell sometimes, this blurring of life and dream. Too many beers could do that to any man. And Stinker was up to his sixth in just the past few minutes. He was forever thirsty. Stinker turned to Buck, who was sleeping in the passenger seat, legs twitching. Kid was no doubt dreaming about visions only a subnormal 12-year-old holler hillbilly would ever dream about, most likely teasing creek turtles and setting fire to tipple houses.
I'm lucky,
thought Stinker.
This is the good life.
And it was. True, Stinker knew a lot more people with a lot more money, with bigger trailers that had working toilets, with vasectomy scars created by licensed physicians, with cars that weren't nicknamed after deceased Memphis whores. But Stinker had his goddamn freedom. And wasn't that worth a lot more than any amount of money? Even the $18,000 he would have been earning each and every year by illegally hauling gently used dental supplies state to state? Yeah, this was the good life, all right. The only thing Stinker now needed was a beautiful woman. And where on Lorne Green's earth could he ever possibly hope to find...
Well, lo and behold!
Screamed Stinker. He usually didn't scream, or use the word low. Buck awoke with a start.
Fuck?
The boy muttered groggily.
His fuck pussy?
Go back to sleep, kid. This is a grown man's business.
Miss Becky swerved over to the side of the two-lane highway just behind the stalled Toyota Celica with its hood up. Stinker recognized the car. It belonged to that gorgeous Betty from earlier, whizzing along, without a care in her cottony, pink-encrusted world.
Typical woman,
thought Stinker.
Don't know a slipper piston from a tire thumper.
And yet Stinker remembered catching just that fleeting glance when she had passed him doing at least 100. Those breasts, and that hair. Holy God on a barbecued bun. Stinker hadn't seen a female specimen this fine since, well, a few nights ago, but, like any male lioness prowling the African Serengeti for sex, Stinker was always hungry.
You called AA?
Proclaimed Stinker as he exited Miss Becky and made his way over to the Toyota.
I meant AAA. Watch out now. I think I might just be the man to help.
I do need help. Thank you.
said the voice, still hidden behind the hood, absent-mindedly. This gal, she was used to getting her way.
Well, let's see what we can do here, little lady,
declared Stinker, adjusting his mustache, which sometimes pointed in all directions but the correct one. Stinker preferred it combed down. He was no satin disco star. Stinker still had a long strand of pink bubblegum lodged in his molestache's dense fur, and perhaps even a Cheerio back from snack time. And, for some reason, a match head. But it was too late to do anything about that now. He'd worry about all this at the next rest stop when he'd pay Spanish to clean it for him. Stinker quickened his pigeon-toed booted step and walked around the woman's stalled car. Bam! And there she was, before his very eyes. He now saw, for the very first time in his life, what beauty, real beauty, and not dolled-up beauty, looked like close at hand. He sized her up as if she was a pedigreed colt at a minimum bid auction. The lustrous devil hair on his knuckles began to quiver.
Sweetest piece of flesh I've ever seen.
This was no Jezebel whore, a cherry without the stem. No, this was a lady, as refined as they came. She was a slender filly, solid teeth, strong legs, ropey, sturdy arms, a nice healthy color to her cheeks, thoroughbred from top to bottom, especially the bottom. A clean, rural smell, like the goat feed dispenser at Meemaw's farm. If Stinker ever decided to procreate, this champion mare would produce a most dynamite pinto. And that meant the world. Not just to Stinker, but to the world. Turning his attention to the engine, and trying his very best to act professional, Stinker declared,
"She's surely busted. Sorry. You'll have to join us in our vehicle, ma'am."
"Your vehicle?"
the woman asked, perplexed.
"But didn't you say you were from AAA? You're not here to help?"
"Ma'am, I just lied,"
said Stinker, taking off his cowboy hat and placing it over his heart.
"But it's been a mighty long while since I've seen anyone so gosh darn beautiful, and I do reckon that it would be best for all of us if you joined my boy and I on our adventure."
"And what adventure might that be?"
asked the woman, adjusting her hot pink jumpsuit purchased at Frederick's of Hollywood and not on credit.
"Ever wanted to meet the President of the United States?"
replied Stinker, already knowing the answer.
"Thought about it."
"Then come with me, and so you shall."
He extended his hand, much like a rich count would in 14th century Australia.
"Well?"
began the woman. Stinker got serious.
"In life, you're either running away from something, or to something. Which one for you?"
The woman looked into the face of this gorgeous man with a mustache as thick as a mound of hay at a chili fest. She saw sadness, and goodness, and a street wiseness she never in a million years could have learned at any liberal Northeast fancy college. Also, that one match head.
"Away,"
she finally replied.
"My parents wanted me to marry the wrong man for all the wrong reasons. He's weak, but rich. And I like strong and poor. Or lower middle class, anyway."
"I know,"
said Stinker, grinning.
"I knew that from the start.
And so I bought this car. But I don't know all too much about cars."
"Didn't think you would, honey. Women drive cars like men change diapers. Messy, and with God's guacamole a-flying a-hither and a-thither. Besides,"
he continued, not receiving the response he was looking for,
"this car ain't nothing but a heap of Jap crap. Oriental cheese. Wonton fooey. Stick to a mare I can made next time, and you can never go wrong."
Stinker extended his left hand. Now he stood with both arms out. He took back his left hand, changed his mind, and then put out his right. If you were driving past, you would have seen a man who looked foolish and possibly even a bit deranged. But up close, it was heavenly.
Shake my left hand,
said Stinker.
It's closer
to my heart.
They shook. Gwyneth's eyes drifted down to the stretch of material on the inside of Stinker's denim thighs. She noticed they were bleached whiter than the rest of the jeans from him caressing his manhood. She wondered if this beast would be freaky in the feathers, a true gash jockey, riding them bareback and fancy-free. Gwyneth felt her crotch grow warm to the touch.
It felt good to want a man again. This man who was all a dream, hominy grits and double cream. Yatag,
she thought.
You are the angel glow.
Stinker, too, was in love. He again felt like a 12-year-old with a crush on his gorgeous teacher who just happened to be in her mid-50s, the one he'd have an illegal relationship with and then get kicked out of school forever because of. But this woman who stood before him now, this incredibly rich, well-bred creature who had no business standing without a man by the side of I-95, took Stinker's arms in hers and marveled at their dirty downiness. She never looked back. She didn't need to. Chapter 9. Pump It. Orville Max III was immaculately dressed. Perfectly tailored black suit, black tie, and black shoes. Even the flower in his lapel was black. The flower was a carnation, which symbolized cut-rate and mass-produced death that the women didn't particularly enjoy. This was his uniform. Everyone had one. Orville Max sat within his downtown apartment, overlooking the great city of Atlanta below. The Big A. The Big Peach. A-Town. Hotlanta. The West Hartford of the South.
God, how this great city had changed. So much insanity and uncertainty. Not the way it used to be. Not the way it should be.
The apartment, all 5,000 square feet, was rigged out with all that was current and none that was dated. Shag carpeting from floor to ceiling, and then back over to floor, and then over to the front door, which was also shagged from top to bottom, and then back up to the ceiling, and then back over to the floor, stopping only at the avocado green hi-fi cabinets, which extended over to the huge hot goldenrod microwavable oven, leaking radiation every which way but loose. Also a rattan sex chair, and an indoor cactus garden. Fancy owl wallpaper, too. And curtains that were controlled by remote control.
An urban Graceland.
The goddamn place had cost Orville a virtual fortune, $35,000. But it truly was a beaut. Orville Max sat deep within his leather couch just below his framed military honors and stared intently at a glossy photo of Stinker. Orville hated Stinker and his type. Takers, scragglers, hoodlums, the denim flared, sideburns down to the curlies, yogurt practitioners, Unitarians. What else? Those who swam at the Y, porn store cashiers with an attitude. He hated them all. Oh, and tourists who lamely attempted to eat slabs of marbled boardwalk fudge with plastic sporks. Them too. Regardless, the weak and knock-kneed were ruining this wonderful country with their levity and their lightheartedness, their love for the Sunday funnies, their disrespect for the law, their permissiveness. This country, this wonderful country that his grandparents from Germany had snuck into using false documents that hid a certain past, was no place for levity. not with the communists bearing their red fang choppers into all that was sacred and then ripping it all to shreds. Now was the time for strength. What was now needed was a mottled, arthritic, middle-aged hand, like the one belonging to the dear departed president. The great man had been run out of office by sissies, and that was a real shame. Orville had loved the man like a father, and the great man had loved Orville back like a son. No, he wasn't always a perfect father. He had his problems. In fact, he was a terrible, abusive father. Often he was impatient. Sometimes he was curt, violent, a bit oily. But he was a saint compared with that big-toothed goofball currently occupying the honorable office. A do-gooder, a wimpy weakling, a lefty loo, a pansy, a fwayed of wabbits, for crying out loud. Orville took out a Semper Fi rag and then his bottle of silicone lubricant. It was time to wipe down his shotgun. He'd do so with care, with precision, with a love and a respect that was no longer evident in this failing country. Smooth, long strokes, nice and even jerks, with the lubricant making a soft sigh and a delicious slurp. This was nice. Orville pumped faster, and faster, and then even faster. Suddenly he stopped, out of breath. Pumped one more time for good measure. Now, a little sleepy, he peered through the M16 rifle's sights.
Bang! 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 Prepare to die! Stinker, go bye-bye.
If the great man was still in power, he'd have agreed that Stinker had to go, and the great man would have helped. But the great man was sadly no longer in power. So, as it was, and probably always would be, Orville Max III was entirely on his own. Orville again began to pump. He had more than enough anger jammed to make it through the night. Chapter 10. Into the woods we go, we go. With great and loving care, Rascal was picking the numerous crumbs and nits out of Stinker's stash. The entire gang, including the woman who still had no name, sat on a picnic blanket next to a gorgeous man-made lake built behind an office park off I-95. The grassy spot sat just behind the area where the geese slept and frequently defecated. Paradise.
So,
the woman said to Boner,
how did you and Stinker meet?
Well,
said Boner,
that's a story you'll have to hear one day.
Go for it,
said the woman.
All I have is time.
Boner smiled.
This girl is so very beautiful. If she didn't belong to my best friend, I would touch her like a doctor.
Well, see here,
began Boner.
Have you ever heard of the Rainbow Reachers?
I don't think so.
Some might call it a cult. For many years, I called it home, until I needed to escape. A friend of a friend told me about Stinker, said in all humility that he was the greatest man in all of the universe. Well, I didn't believe him, but I learned real quick.
How?
Asked the woman inquisitively.
He led me away from the clutches of Father in the middle of the night, a daring escape. He didn't even charge me, only asked that I give up my career in the arts. I had devoted my life to sculpting driftwood pieces into the shapes of lesser beloved biblical characters. Told me that I'd now have to spend the rest of my life assisting him on his many amazing adventures.
True?
The woman asked Stinker.
As true as this here thigh mustache,
Stinker replied, pointing tween his thighs. Quickly changing the subject, the woman motioned to Rascal.
What a sweet girl. I just want to cuddle her.
Wouldn't be so smart,
said Jumbo, his muzzle shiny with fried chicken juice.
This here monkey might appear all roses and apples, but she's more bitter than a Georgia hen in a kosher deli.
Ain't a monkey. She a chimp.
Righto. She's got more zippity kick than Evel Knievel's American Eagle 750cc.
Shithouse,
cried Buck.
Shithouse, shithouse, shithouse.
Everyone laughed except for Gwyneth, who found it disturbing.
You know,
said Stinker, licking strange yellow butter substitute off his fingers.
We never did find out your name. Care to tell us?
The woman, who was eating all proper and dignified with the expensive cutlery she had brought along in her knockoff Gucci luggage, smiled daintily and replied,
Gwyneth. Gwyneth Lace. And it is a rightful pleasure to meet all of your acquaintances.
What gives?
Asked Jumbo, just before belching. Boner struck Jumbo on the back of his head.
Ow!
The damn fool had no manners in front of anyone.
But what I meant is just how such a lovely Bambi ended up with such an ugly batch of badgers as us.
He belched again.
You could lead a fat pig to a bag of sorghum,
thought Boner.
Oh, I wouldn't say any of you are ugly now,
said Gwyneth, her long hair catching a tint of the sun's late afternoon rays.
In fact, you're just the anecdote I need from the poison I've been consuming.
What type of poison?
Asked Boner, growing serious. This girl was like nothing he'd ever witnessed. He was used to the more gritty variety, the type with sweet tattooed on one breast, sour on the other, with silver-plated pirate earrings in areas where the sun don't shine, with genital warts where the sun do shine.
Such as a society that looks down on all those who want to be free,
explained Gwyneth. It seemed like she had spent a very long time keeping this speech to herself, and it was now tumbling out quickly, almost in a torrent.
A society where you don't have to marry the stodgy eldest son of mother's best friend, where you can instead fall in love with a real man with cigar burns on his inner thighs.
She glanced over to Stinker, who blushed. He never blushed. But this was different. Oh, how this was different.
Like a world in which you're told to do this and told to do that. Where a rich girl with no job and no plans and mental issues can run naked through the woods behind an elementary school at noon and not be arrested by a small-town police officer who knows only rules and not possibilities.
Stinker was blushing even harder.
It was time. Come with me,
Stinker announced, standing. And then, looking down, he muttered,
Oops.
He bent over, ashamed. This never happened outside the trailer.
Oopsie-daisy.
His magoo was arising. Everyone laughed, except for Buck, who didn't quite understand. One day he might. Probably within a year or so. Maybe less. 8 months tops.
I think it's time you and me hit those deep, dark woods,
said Stinker, pointing to the deep, dark woods adjacent to the lake.
Oh, I do indeed. Dinky-dunkin' in the woods.
This was Stinker's sexual thing. Everyone had one. Gwyneth's thing was
holding muley squiggly baby rats from failed strip mall pet stores and wondering what they could ever be thinking.
Boner's was
hugging amusement park mascots without their knowledge and permission long after security announced, Step away, sir.
Jumbo's was
sneaking into sausage factories and prancing about with stolen Buffon safety caps.
Why, whatever do you mean?
Asked Gwyneth to Stinker, feigning ignorance. She knew. The sexual tension was delicious, which wasn't a surprise. Gwyneth was a Gemini Saggy. Stinker, a double cancer. Together, kick-a-poo joy juice. Gwyneth thought of Stinker naked against her now, his penis like a phallic thimble. Stinker said nothing more.
Didn't need to.
He pushed Gwyneth, gently but with manly determination, straight into Mother Nature's fragrant thicket. Gwyneth could not resist. How could any woman? Chapter 11, Okie Dokie Big and Lil Smokies. The tiny man and his big smoky daddy sat in their camouflaged deer stand in the middle of the South Carolina woods, located just behind Doc's filling station, 200 miles as the crow flies from where Stinker was now making slinky outdoorsy love on top of a plastic garbage bag to create a barrier between his half-nude body and pesky insects and twigs. The tiny Smokey held his miniature binoculars up to his baby-like eyes, while his father, head to toe in plaster cast, mumbled and complained.
Daddy, I told you I will get them,
said the tiny man, annoyed by his father's frequent, incessant complaints. Only his father's lips could move, but he was certainly making the best of that. Every bone in the old man's body was broken. And this was what he was worried about? A beer-battered, troubled troubadour by the name of Stinker? The little man was small, but he wasn't stupid. He had meticulously mapped out Stinker's trajectory and saw that the low-rent Lothario was heading north, saw that Stinker would run out of gas halfway between Atlanta and Charleston, knew that all the legal gas stations between here and Portland, Maine, would already be running low on fuel, and that lines would be long. There was only one place for Stinker to head. Stinker didn't wait for gas. Stinker didn't wait for nothing. The little man knew that when Stinker truly needed his go-go juice, he'd have to stop at this South Carolina swampy moonshine station, where all the degenerates had been filling up their mean machine since the towelheads had started hoarding God's precious black milk. Plenty of motion potion to go around. There was never a line. There was as much gas as one would ever need. You just had to know the right person. And for those who rode the highways and byways of this glorious nation, and did so for a living, the right person was a frizzed-up, tweaked-out, sizzled-and-grizzled backwoods skunk who smelled of bad soil and angry intentions. His name was Doc, and he'd been dealing diesel for as long as country freaks had been hustling bootleg motor drink. Doc lived in a tumbled-down sheetrock shebang way back yonder. Good luck finding it. Doc had earned his degree on the dirt trails, with a major in attitude and a minor in brashness. His B.S. degree would have read Shim-Shammery. 75 years old now, with a broken nose and a weak prostate. Kicked out of the military for fragging a Yankee cook for mispronouncing jambalaya. But a strong mind, and a liver that was showing signs of severe cirrhosis, and an extra nipple located on his lower back. And yet, he was a good man, and dependable, unlike the sheriff, who was now mumbling something incoherent. It came out like, the little man rolled his little eyes and shook his tiny head.
No, Daddy, Stinker don't arrive until later tonight, but we'll be ready. No, Daddy, I don't know when. That's why I got us here so early.
The sheriff tried to nod, found that he couldn't, and went back to sucking on his frozen blueberry-flavored carbonated beverage. A blue stream slid down his chin and then onto his plaster full-body cast. It was funny because the sheriff was encased entirely in white, and the drink was blue. The little man dabbed the old man's face with his sleeve, but then thought better of it. He'd get to that later. Better to keep watch. You never knew when a crazy-ass grinder such as Stinker might come bursting on through.
You just never knew.
Chapter 12. Stinker Don't Reverse. Stinker and Boner were in a hairy, wrinkled pickle. It was a few hours after the picnic, and Miss Becky was now roughly 5 miles south of the South Carolina border, on a dirt road, before a raging creek, with nowhere to go.
Stuck.
The bridge that spanned the two sides was nowhere to be found. A sign read, "Men working. Do not attempt to jump. No bridge. Really dangerous." Now see, this here was a problem. Why? 'Cause Stinker didn't reverse. Never had, never would. Never even thought to learn. As capable as he was moving forward, Stinker was the complete opposite when it came to going backwards. And he liked it that way. But not everyone did. Boner, for one.
Got your ears on?
Boner barked into the CB mic from inside his truck just behind the trans.
I say, got your ears on, Stinker?
Boner's CB crackled, and then there was the melodious voice of Stinker.
Big old mound of turkey turd ahead, son. A plate of shit biscuits and squirrel gravy. But you know the rules. No reversing or I'll be cursing.
Next to Boner, Jumbo was now spreading fried chicken fat on his belly and spelling his name upside down.
O-B-M-U-J.
Stinker, listen up and listen good. We got a president to meet and a frosty shipment of hops to hand over. We ain't got zero time for no stinker nonsense now.
Boner paused to formulate the double negatives. He shrugged.
Come back, come back.
There was only silence. Boner realized it was useless to argue with the man. It was like arguing with a tree stump in a discount chainsaw store. Boner's mic let out a screech, and he knew that Stinker had turned off the transmitter on his end.
Can't stand the truth is what? Got commodity butter in his ears. I'll meet him at Doc's. Let him find his own damn way. Besides, it'll take him half the shapeshifting night to jump that creek. If he don't kill himself first. Godspeed to idiots and hockeyheads who don't reverse.
Hey, where are we headed?
Asked Jumbo from Boner's passenger seat, finishing his bucket of chicken and starting on a steaming deep-dish pizza pie topped with very large crawdaddies. At least he hoped they were crawdaddies.
Away from this shit on a shingle,
said Boner, putting the truck into a three-point turn, which was incredible. There was very little room. The truck's clock read 4:45. The three-point turn turned into a 32-point turn. The truck's clock now read 4:46. It was incredible.
Ah, enough of this jaw-jacking,
Boner announced.
Time to get this wiggle-waggin' a-wangin'. Sometimes you just have to pay the water bill at the Fandango factory, and this is one of those times.
Jumbo made a mental note to find out what this all meant later. Boner launched into his spastic cartoon character that made everyone crack up whenever there was a tense situation.
I say, away from here!
Jumbo cheered and then made the universal sign for truckers to pull the air horn. Typically only children and adults with below average intelligence made this request, but this did not stop Jumbo. Boner drove away, horn blasting, with Rascal in the back. Or at least he thought Rascal was in the back. Chapter 13. Why Ain't He A... What goes on inside the mind of a wild chimp? No one knows. Not even the wild chimp experts. Perhaps not even the chimps themselves. Rascal was no better or worse than any other wild chimp. She was uncultivated and unruly and violent and horrible to be around, with breath that smelled worse than prolonged death. Her fur was overripe, and her eyes were a pulsating and deathly yellow. Her claws were violently sharp, and her tail was half swollen with jungle rot. But that's typical. What wasn't typical was her need for freedom. What goes on inside the mind of a wild chimp? No one knows, but perhaps it goes something like this.
Rascal need freedom. Rascal lonely. Rascal want jungle sex with male chimp.
Maybe, or maybe not. Something of that high degree of scientificness can never be accurately established. Knowing what animals thought was more an art than a science. Just ask the scientists. What could be determined was that Rascal had escaped from out of her circus chains in the back of the truck and was now making her primate-like way through the woods to an undetermined location to participate in sexual congress, but not on top of a plastic garbage bag.
Rascal wanted. Rascal needed. Now!
What goes through the mind of a wild chimp? God only knows. And maybe not even him. Especially not him. Chapter 14. Rascal Lets Loose. Orville Max III saw the strangest thing. If he was a swearing man, and he wasn't, Orville would have fucking sworn that he'd just seen a monkey break out from the back of the truck close to where he was now parked. Orville knew for certain that Stinker was not traveling alone. He seemed to have been joined by at least one female and one very fat, pathetic excuse for a human. But there was also a circus animal with them. Not that this animal was cute. Far from it. This creature seemed diseased with madness, like the rest of the country. And yet, there was a certain bloodshot, cross-eyed look in its heavy, unnaturally lidded eyes that Orville could relate to. A look of fear, but also of unleashed power, sick of being held down by those who were weaker and stupider.
I won't kill this monkey. I will not kill this monkey. He's like me. Berserk, but with a good soul, and a very large and inflamed rear end.
Orville sat in his 1977 Cadillac DeVille, an American car not limited in any way by Oriental cheapness. His car stereo system blasted opera, the only style of music that Orville could abide. Specifically, Wagner. True, Rick Wagner wasn't an American composer, he was East German, and yet his tunes spoke universal truths about soaring melodies and lovely crescendos. To Orville, Wagner seemed like the type of guy you could sidle up next to at a bar and just talk politics. Although it wasn't a word Orville used often, Rick Wagner was cool. Orville watched the monkey gallop off through the woods, away from where the Trans Am sat. The animal seemed intent on leaving quickly. Orville wished it luck. He had his own problems to worry about. Namely,
how to take Stinker out.
Speaking of which,
why was Stinker's car just idling in place all this time? What was going on inside? And was it sexually related?
Orville grew excited and began to imagine what Wagner would think. Would he share a brewski with Orville and watch Stinker and his lady going at it, all hammer and tongs? Or would Ricky be difficult and claim that it wasn't the right thing to do? Orville had no idea. He really didn't. Life wasn't an opera. Chapter 15. The Day's Close. Within the labia-red Naugahyde interior of Miss Becky, Gwyneth and Stinker were having their first fight. If it wasn't so mean-spirited, it would have been adorable. In the back seat, next to the priceless six-pack of Schlitz within an empty cardboard diaper box, Buck was fast asleep. He was dozing off a boozy afternoon.
Now, how would you know?
Asked Stinker with exasperation.
How could you possibly know the best angle in which to launch this here car over this here creek?
Gwyneth just looked at him. Stinker asked,
how would you know anything about cars or creeks?
Gwyneth reached deep into her fancy knockoff Gucci purse and pulled out an oddly shaped piece of plastic with numbers on it. Stinker's eyes narrowed and settled on a fecal point in the middle distance, just as they always did when he was confused or having an orgasm.
Huh?
He mumbled.
What?
I didn't want to tell you this earlier, but I make my living as a mathematician. As a matter of fact, I am one of the best mathematicians in the entire world.
Speak English. In this country, we speak English.
This,
said Gwyneth, holding up the disturbing piece of plastic,
is called a protractor. Do you know what mathematicians use protractors for?
Stinker smiled.
When you love tractors, you're protractor,
declared Stinker impishly. He blew a bubble which smelled of wild apples.
No,
said Gwyneth, losing patience with this moronic yet enchanting southern savage. Her neck was turning red, a sure sign of the temper that was so strongly linked to her Irish heritage.
A protractor is used to determine angles.
Angels.
No, angles. What degree of angle we must launch this car in order to successfully land on the other side.
Stinker let out one of his signature laughs, which would have sounded obnoxious or off-putting if it came from anyone but from a man who owned a pet iguana named Harry Pousset, who lived beneath a French fry lamp.
The only pro...
Protractor.
The only protractor I ever need is right in here,
Stinker said, pointing first down to his groin and then back up to his head.
And this here protractor is saying that we need to jump at...
He paused, and then spread his arms wide.
This angle, to make it. I've done it before, I intend to do it again. That's why I built the dirt ramp like that.
He pointed to the dirt ramp that he had just built like that. Stinker's brain was the original thinking machine.
If we take that angle, we will most certainly die. Is that what you want?
Honey, I live by a different set of numbers and rules. My numbers come from the streets and the stars.
Gwyneth looked confused.
Anyway,
continued Stinker, with great confidence in his heavenly eyes,
we shall be fine, as sure as the day is long.
Right.
Just relax.
But the confidence in his dazzling eyes was already beginning to fade. It could switch that fast.
Stinker, don't reverse.
I know,
said Gwyneth, fed up.
So you've said, but I am extremely tired of even attempting to get anything through that thick, hairy head of yours. Just go.
Honey,
said Stinker.
You're in the right hands.
He made a fist.
Don't worry about a thing.
Exhaust poured from the trans's triple dual system, the only one of its type in all of Georgia.
Ready?
Asked Stinker, knowing full well that this was as ready as he'd ever be.
As ready as I'll ever be,
replied Gwyneth, knowing full well that this was as ready as she'd ever be. But what else could she do? It was too late in the game to change her mind. Her life was already in Stinker's freakishly veiny hands, and there wasn't a damn thing she could do about it. She liked this feeling.
All women do.
Stinker popped Miss Becky into drive, with finesse, just like she wanted it. No, needed it. And Miss Becky fishtailed her way down the dirt road, slowly at first. 10 miles per hour, 20, and then with more speed, 30 miles per hour, 40. This wasn't good. If Stinker didn't reach 75 miles per hour, preferably faster, they were all goners, including Miss Becky. 50 miles per hour, 60, 65.
So close.
70 miles per hour.
Come on, girl,
said Stinker, stimulating her compliant dashboard with his ring finger.
Do it for your old man. Come on, baby.
The vibration of the engine stirred an aching in Stinker's groin that had not been satisfied in hours.
Not enough speed,
screamed Gwyneth over the roar of the one-of-a-kind V-48 engine.
Almost there. Scooch on over, girl. Scooch.
Not enough angle.
Plenty enough angle,
screamed Stinker. He usually didn't scream, especially just after a woman did. The front windshield of Miss Becky exploded out with a horrible explosion. Glass blasted back into the car, spraying both Stinker and Gwinnett, and even Buck, who was still sleeping off the day's drink. Even in his sleep, Buck was cursing. It was adorable. Somehow, Stinker managed to keep control, but noticed with great fear that he had only hit the dirt ramp at 72 miles per hour.
Would it be enough?
Stinker had to admit he didn't think it would be. He also had to admit that he had made up the 75 miles per hour fact. Maybe it was 85, or even 100.
Was this really happening?
Stinker took another sip of Giggle Water. He sometimes called it Colorado Kool-Aid. To other people who weren't in the life, it was simply called beer. Stinker's head hurt. Or was it his neck? Stinker didn't know.
Goddamn questions.
Stinker closed his eyes and experienced perhaps his last ever thought. He was riding a stolen donkey, ass back and fancy free in the parking lot of a rendering plant, while humming Goober Peas and pleasuring himself with a shoplifted bottle of Body on Tap. It was a thought most great men have before dying. Stinker closed his eyes and bravely hoped for the best. Chapter 16. Bang Bang.
Will it be enough to get over the creek?
Orville had asked himself a few moments earlier.
Not a chance. But why take a chance?
Orville pulled out his military-issued M16 rifle and aimed for Stinker's Trans Am's front windshield.
Semper Fi,
said Orville as he pulled off a shot. It missed. At that moment, Orville could almost smell Saigon. The whores, the dope, the pimps, the saffron, the back gutter wrench of a country turning from good to bad, from safe to miserable. Also elephant dung. Lord, the elephant dung. Orville remembered a time when all he could smell was the fumy excreta of those great loping beasts. In all honesty, he missed it. Horribly. Orville quickly took one last shot, all rickety-tick.
Buku diggy-doo.
The front window of Miss Becky caved in on itself, glass flying inward. The explosion was tremendous.
Stinker go au revoir! Bang, bang, and boo-hoo!
In his mind's eye, Orville saw an elephant smile. Those damn beasts. Jungle shitters never forgot. Chapter 17. Uh-oh. It wouldn't be enough. Stinker knew this now, and he was so very sorry he had ever attempted such a stupid stunt. What was he thinking? His brain was fuzzy from beer. He had consumed two since hitting the dirt ramp.
We are going to die!
Screamed Gwyneth. Like most elegant ladies of her upper crust ilk, she despised using contractions.
Yes,
said Stinker, all calm. Over the years, whenever thinking about dying, he had imagined he'd do so in a puddle of urine, not his own. How wrong he had been.
Yes, we are gonna die,
Stinker declared.
So, penny for your thoughts?
How about a nickel?
Asked Gwyneth. Even when dying, she could be wonderfully quippy.
Only got a penny,
replied Stinker, who could also be just as quippy.
But it's a shiny one.
The smell of his own fear blasted through his nostrils. Stinker gagged. Miss Becky was flying over the creek, but it was not nearly fast or high enough. Stinker took Gwyneth's hand in his and held both up high. If someone had been standing on shore, they would have seen a convertible Trans Am soaring through the air, but just about to crash, with a driver and his passenger holding hands. It was a beautiful sight. Alarming, but beautiful. Stinker was well aware of the blown-out front windshield, but he would worry about that some other time. Either way, he was a winner.
Goodbye, baby,
Stinker said to Gwyneth.
I always did love you.
And me, you,
said Gwyneth in that elegant way of hers. She had never seen herself dying while jumping over a sad little-known Georgia creek in a leased Trans Am, but there were far worse ways to go. She couldn't think of any at the moment, but she'd think about all this later. Or not at all. Either way, she too was a winner. Buck, blissfully unaware of what was happening, continued to snooze away the day, surrounded by broken glass. The kid was really passed out. Stinger would have to remember to give Buck less Cajun napalm the next time the kid was in need of mental escape from his horrible, relentless mountain thoughts. Gwyneth and Stinger prepared to enter a new realm of consciousness. Wherever the two ended up, even hell itself, the kid and Miss Becky would just have to follow. Chapter 18. Could this be? Orville almost wished he could somehow film this amazing scene, much like a director would with a big-budget Hollywood movie that supposedly took place down south but was really shot in California and that showed for a few nights at a handful of southern theaters and drive-ins before closing forever. Orville hoped time would slow down so that he'd be able to experience all of this in slow motion. Stinker was going to die, and Orville had had a hand in it. When he was in country, Orville had killed many enemy combatants, perhaps up to a few hundred, and had not shed one precious American tear over any of them. Well, there was that one he had cried about, but she was a spy, and Orville hadn't cried for long, maybe 30 seconds. Just long enough to wash away that womanly smell, get back into his uniform, polish his boots, and proceed on with his day, including wrestling nude with his well-oiled best pal, Buzzy. In retrospect, the lady probably wasn't a spy after all, just a female with more intelligence than she needed for her own damned good. Maybe she wasn't even an enemy combatant, or a female. But this kill felt different. Orville was grinning wide. It almost hurt. Muscles not used to this, he thought. Hadn't been this happy since the Saturday Night Massacre, or at least that's what the Jew press had called it. Best night of his life. The Trans Am was still flying through the thick southern air, but with its front windshield blown to bits, she was dropping. And quickly.
Not a chance she'll make it over,
thought Orville. But Orville's grin quickly turned into a grimace.
Can't be,
he thought.
How could this possibly be? Stinker was as good as dead. What is happening here?
What was happening was that the Trans was going to make it after all.
Well, this could be an opera. I swear to my Lord, this could be a goddamn opera. Not one of those horrible rock operas about a lippy, hippie, goateed Jesus who looked as if he worked at a scented candle store. But an opera with a fat dyke singing in a grating East German tongue. The only kind worth listening to.
Orville was locked and loaded, the safety long off. Full metal banquet.
Jacket!
With the opera blaring and an imaginary Rick Wagner sucking on his love knuckle, the guy really was cool, Orville watched the resurrection of this man they called the Stinker. If it wasn't so horrifying, it would have been beautiful. Maybe life was an opera after all. Chapter 19. Nice Landing. Stinker had already prepped for the end. He was ready for whatever was about to come his way. His only regret in life was that he should have done more aimless driving and transporting a very low-grade hop-infused substandard stagger juice for very little cash, but that's a wish all men have.